There are many, many sermons that could be and have been preached about hope. We've heard many this summer. You'll forgive me that I cannot fit the rest of them in today's sermon, although I really wanted to. You'll have to give me another chance. When I think about hope, or maybe hopelessness, I always go back to something that I found in my younger years. I was having a time of it. It could have been depression, maybe it was. I maybe could have thought of it as nihilism, except I didn't really have an understanding of nihilism at the time. I didn't really have an understanding of anarchy, and I don't really want to burn it all down, if that's what anarchy means. Perhaps it was some sort of existential something or other, but there was something going on with me internally. And being the good Baptist girl that I was, at least at the time, I read my scriptures. I found what describes so much of what I was feeling. It was in Ecclesiastes 1, a book in the Hebrew Bible. Basically, it starts like vanity, vanity, meaning uselessness, uselessness, or valueless, in vain. It happens without it changing anything, whatever we do. It goes like this: vanity of vanities, says the teacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What do people gain from all the toil at which they toil under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains. The sun rises and it goes down, and then it hurries back to the place where it comes up again. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north, and then it goes around and round, goes the wind, and on its circuits, the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea never gets full, to the place where the streams flow, and then they continue to flow. All things are wearisome, more than one can express. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, the ear, nor is the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. There is nothing new under the sun. I really held on to that. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has already been in the ages before us. The people of long ago are not remembered, nor will there be any remembrance of the people yet to come by those who come after them. Now, we don't subscribe to that so much here. But would you describe this passage as expressing a feeling? How would you describe it? Expressing a feeling of futility? Or is it fatalistic? Fatalism, maybe? World weary? Hopelessness? All that, right? I don't know. I still wrestle with it. Ministers wrestle with it. I ask the question in a minister's colleagues page, and no one really answered that question. How have you felt hopelessness? Maybe the better question is, when have you felt it? Maybe you're having a hard time at school or work, or you realize you forgot to study for a test or prepare your homework, or there's an algebra or trigonometry problem you just don't get. Maybe it feels like you'll never get it. Maybe your relationship isn't going so well. You realize you have a lot of work to do, or your young adult or adult or young children are struggling. Maybe you're experiencing climate grief, or you've watched the incoherent ramblings of those who offer falsities from the national and world stage. Maybe someone died or is dying, or your pet died and you really miss them. Maybe you too struggle with existential questions like, who am I and why am I here? That central spiritual question that we struggle with of why we are alive and have to die. Maybe you don't know what it is. UU ethicist Dr. Sharon Welch long ago named this sort of hopeless feeling that we have called culture despair. Culture despair is what it sounds like when, like what it is when we unpack it, an educated, middle-class, often white people condition. First, we realize that the vastness and complexity of the many forms of injustice, and then we realize what it would take to change it, and then we fall into despair. Miguel de la Torre, Dr. Miguel de la Torre, professor of social ethics and Latinx studies at ILEF School of Theology in Denver, Colorado, cautions that hope actually serves a middle-class purpose that all too often can be used as an excuse for not doing anything about the suffering or societal oppression, not doing anything to alleviate inequities and injustices of those on the margins and those who are on the margins of the margins. We are caught up in our own comfort, so we see what's happening, but we feel powerless to do anything to affect change. I know you know this, Anne-Marie. Just last week, though, I heard that hope is making a comeback. Maybe some of you heard it too. I believe that that makes us here at UUCL what they call trendsetters. We decided last spring to offer this summer as a summer of hope. Through our lay-led services, where and how do we find it? How do we not give up? How do we not settle into our own comfort, but move beyond it? And what are our sources of hope? And we've done just that. I've been moved and inspired, enlightened and relieved, frankly. I've laughed and I've cried and nodded in appreciation with the thought, the care, and the love that's been put into each of the services this summer. And the music, am I right? It's been stellar. I hope that if you were disillusioned going into this summer, that you feel more uplifted now. In Spilling the Light, Julian Jamaica Soto writes, "In this community, we hold hope close. We don't always know what comes next, but that cannot dissuade us. We don't always know what to do, but that will not mean that we are lost in the wilderness. We rely on the certainty beneath, the foundation of our values and ethics. We are the people who return to love like a North Star and to the truth that we are greater together than we are alone. Our hope does not live in some glimmer of an indistinct future," they write. "Rather, we know the way to the world of which we dream, and by covenant and the movement forward of one right action and then the next, we know that one day we will arrive at home." Is hope a spiritual activity or a spiritual practice in itself? Or is it maybe a byproduct or the result of faith? In my seminary ethics class, we were tasked with writing our own theology of hope. And the professor posed this question: in the face of pain and suffering that feels overwhelming, why ought we choose to live another day? One of the things that gives me hope are those who are willing to face death, those who are willing to talk about it, because if we're willing to face our own mortality and those that we love without denial, then there's nothing to me that we can't face together, nothing that we can't talk about, grow from, embrace as a tool for transformation. If we look through the lens of how each faith defines the problem in the world and the solution to the problem, This is what the youth spent last year doing. Here's what we come up with. Buddhism, for example, sees that suffering is the problem. Anyone, youth, you want to tell me what the solution is? Non-attachment, enlightenment, nirvana, that's right. And Christians see the problem as sin, and the solution is salvation. And what is it for us as Unitarian Universalist? We see the problem as separation, and the solution as connection. What grabs our attention and breaks our hearts as you use is seeing how the world separates or disconnects people from their deepest selves, from our deepest selves, and disconnects us from each other and from life's gifts. Through connection and covenant, through service and gratitude for life, we reestablish that connect. We reestablish that. All of that was covered this summer. Many of the sermons offered answered that seminary professor's question: in the face of pain and suffering that feels overwhelming, why ought we choose to live another day? Because we're here. Because we're here. Because life is a gift, because we can breathe into our lives, because facing death and being willing to talk about it, telling the truth, communication, honesty, commitment, romance, and relationship, and transforming comparison into compassion sets us free. Free to keep love at the center and live into the promise of who we know we can be. Because we are in covenant with each other, and we make promises to each other, and we break those promises. And we promise again. We come back into right relationship and loving relationship. And in those promises that we make, we weave love and gratitude together into a grateful hope, a passion for the possible, an orientation of the heart, a way of walking through our lives with an openness to possibility, to a future we can't yet envision or imagine, a virtue that can be cultivated through practice. We find a hope that is not dependent on circumstances allows us to discover the opportunity that exists in each moment. And to develop the tools to navigate life's challenges, to show up for others, to not fall into culture despair or let our comfort lead us to inaction. Instead, it leads us into compassion and action. Hope plus commitment equals ambition. Ambition plus a plan equals action. And action, if done often enough and by enough people, results in positive change. Theologian Jürgen Moltmann writes, "That is why faith, wherever it develops into hope, causes not rest," are you ready for this? "Causes not rest, but unrest, not patience, but impatience. It does not calm the unquiet heart, but is itself this unquiet heart in us." If you know that your heart is unquiet, if it is disturbed, you have hope. We have hope. Those who hope can no longer put up with reality as it is, but begin to suffer under it, to contradict it. Peace with love means conflict with the world. For the goad of the promised future stabs into the flesh of every unfilled present, end quote. Okay, I threw some other things in there. It wasn't totally a quote. Hope does not mean that we feel peace in our hearts. Hope stirs us, propels us to act. A broken heart means that we still care, that there is still possibility. That's why this summer, we started it with active hope. We created a letter writing campaign for UU The Vote that would happen most of the Sundays after the service. This basket has grown. It's about to overflow. Michelle told me last week, we're up to at least 300 letters. She told me last week that we couldn't do more without her getting special permission. Anne Marie continues to support an auction event that holds space for folks to come and write UU The Vote letters. Is it true that you're hoping for 4,000?
We have about 2,000.
And they have about 2,000. So in the next month, this is going to happen. Rebecca Solnit, author of Hope in the Dark, writes, "Hope is not a lottery ticket you can sit on the sofa and clutch, feeling lucky. It's an axe you break down doors with in an emergency. Hope should shove you out the door because it will take everything you have to steer the future away from endless war, from the annihilation of the earth's treasures and the grinding down of the poor and the marginal. To hope is to give yourself to the future. And that commitment to the future is what makes the present inhabitable." When I first read that Ecclesiastes chapter, I laughed out loud. I laughed in recognition that I was not the first one to feel that way. I was not the first one to experience whatever name you want to give it, hopelessness, futility, fatalism. There is something the writer of Ecclesiastes didn't get in the first chapter. I think he got it later, but he clearly had feels about it. It was the failure of human comprehension, a failure to understand the meaning of life, of existence. There was comfort to me in this chapter. Rather than feeling the futility, this hopelessness, it becomes then what we can count on. The sun will rise, the wind will blow. People will be born and people will die. Our hearts will break and our hearts will rejoice. Maybe what I realized was that I was not the first, nor would I be the last to feel this way, to search for meaning. I was not alone. Neither are you alone as we find our way toward healing, wholeness, and transformation. Healing, wholeness, and transformation, not just for ourselves or those in this room, but those beyond it. Reverend Sean Parker Dennison says that the danger of hopelessness is that we can lose each other. In times of hopelessness, it's easy to get scared of everything and everyone. It's easy to start believing that your neighbor is the problem, and that hoarding is a better strategy than generosity. The problem is that when community starts to break down, we lose the most important source of hope that we have, each other. We hold hope close and we hold on to each other. There is a time for all things. This author of Ecclesiastes goes on to find in chapter 3. But hopelessness is not something I will allow myself to feel, nor do I hope that you do. We have too much to be grateful for, too many options for connection, too many possibilities for how to bend the arc toward justice, too much we can count on, too much creativity and possibility, even in the worst of times. So may we hold hope close and hold each other closer, knowing that we belong to each other and to all that is, that we are each other's harvest, we are each other's business, we are each other's magnitude and bond. May hope be the prayer that we breathe, the song we sing, the mantra we recite in these times and all times. Blessed be, and may it be so.